There's an awful lot of publicity material that the publicist sent over about you, but I would like to ask you to go over a couple of things with me so I can have this on tape. Tell me a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and how it all began.
I was born and raised in a little town called Early, Iowa. I always preface it by saying town, because a lot of people think when I say Early, Iowa, I mean primitive Iowa. But a little town called Early, Iowa. Went to school in Iowa High School. Graduated. Went to Omaha, the big city. For me, it was a big city. And went to work for a construction company and did what any good secretary would do, married the boss. I stayed working in the office and managing the office. And then we retired in 1974. Sold everything and started hitting the road and going to see the world while we were young enough to enjoy it, that type of thing. And I had always wanted to write.
Do you have a house trailer?
We did. We still have a Silver Streak, which we park in the driveway. But we are now homebound. We have a house in the Ozark Mountain country of Branson, Missouri, and love it.
Is that near Neosho?
Yes, it is. My gosh, I didn't think anybody would know that.
That's where my mother was born.
Really?
That's right.
I'll be darned. Small world.
I have a whole family coming from the Midwest. My brother was born in Illinois. I was born in Kansas. My father in Indiana.
You're kidding.
I went to college in Ohio. So.
Yeah. Talk about Midwestern roots.
Well, you have to have a few Midwesterners in New York.
Absolutely.
Well, you married the boss, and you always wanted to write. And what happened?
Well, one day, I had talked about it countless times. I mean, I think I was probably like 80,000 or a million people out here that have always talked about they want to write a book someday. And Bill had heard that probably 200 times. And he is a man who does not believe in idle talk. So one day he just turned to me and said, "Will you get up off your rear and write the book or shut up? Because I don't want to hear about it anymore. Either you're going to do it or you're not." Which really, at the time, made me quite angry, because you expect your husband to say, "Of course, darling, I know you could do that." And then you don't have to do it, because he already knows you could. But it made me mad, and I was going to prove to him that I could actually write a book. It wasn't talk. I could do it. So I wrote the first one. I had been reading romances by Harlequin, and I thought, well, that's the kind of thing I think I could write. I'm going to try that.
Now, when was this?
This was 1975.
What was the name of the first book?
The first one was called No Quarter Asked.
What was that about?
It was set in Texas, in the hill country of West Texas, and dealt with a young girl who had traveled extensively with her father as a photographer, and he had died, and she had gone there just as a recuperative period and met this rancher, and of course the conflict evolved, and it resolved happily ever after.
You had a pretty good idea what the formula is for a romance novel. After you wrote it, what did you do?
Well, I presented it very proudly to my husband, because I, you know, had a point to prove. He looked at it and said, "Well, what are you going to do with it? I mean, now you've written it, what are you going to do with it?" You know? So at that point is when I decided I'd send it into Harlequin, because in 1975, they were basically the only publishers that were doing these small type of romances. So I submitted it to them.
You sent it to Toronto?
Yes. Well, eventually it went to England. At the time, all their editorial offices were in London. So I sent it on to London, and they accepted it with no rewrites, no revisions, nothing. It was just, I was on the road.
And it came out under the name Janet Daly?
That was your
first one? Well, it certainly wasn't your last. What happened next?
Well, you know, there's a shock. Whenever you start dreaming about something, you never dream past the first. You always think if you can just get that first book published, the world stops. I have not quite figured out why you don't dream beyond that point. But I never dreamed beyond the first book, and it was a bit of a shock when I received the contract back, accepting that manuscript and asking for an option on the next. And I'm going, "The next one? You mean I have to do this again?" It is a shock to realize that you don't stop at that point. That's just the beginning. So I pitched right in, worked on another one. At that time, Bill realized I wasn't going to be a dilettante about writing. I was really serious.
Well, obviously, according to the material here, writing this genre has paid off handsomely for you. But what about that first novel? Did they reward you heavily before the first novel, or is this something that they just...
It's like kiss off
a little bit in terms of economics.
It's just like any publishing company. Your advances as a first-time author are always on the small side because they don't know if you'll ever do it again. They don't know if it'll ever the next one will be worthwhile. There's many aspects that are involved business-wise. So I had what would be an average advance on a first book.
Mm-hmm. You're writing now for pocketbooks, right?
Right.
But no longer with the Harlequins?
No longer with Harlequins.
When did this change?
I made my first switch to pocketbooks when I did my first mass market original, which was released in 1978 called Touch the Wind. And it was the first time I branched out of the hardcore decency novels, as we call the small romances, and went into major romance fiction.
Well, what can you tell me the difference between the two?
Well, in a small romance, you have one single solitary plot and two main characters, and any other characters are only to further the story of the main people. But in your major romances, you get into a lot of subplots, you let political influences enter in, you have all sorts of variances, everything that influences our lives today, be it work, family, everything, becomes involved, and then you work in subplots. There are other characters with their own stories.
How many books have you written since that first one?
I've written 80.
70, 80 books?
80 books, yes. Yes. Sort of like unleashing the floodgates when they opened that first one. No, I love writing.
80 books in how many years?
In 7 years. 8 years, I guess, 75 to 83. When I was doing the small romances, I would do an average of probably 12 to 14 of those a year. I have a theory about getting into the writing business. It was true 30, 40 years ago. There was so much magazine fiction that writers could learn their craft and get paid for it, perfect their skills through the various writing fiction. And today, for a new writer to start out, either they have to hit it really whammy big with the great American novel, but if it's just an average novel of a beginning writer, then it's very tough to get a publisher to publish it. Unless you're in one of the category fiction markets, such as the romance market, the westerns, the detectives, the things that are science fiction even. You have to perfect your craft somewhere. You have to learn the trade somewhere.
Well, my mind boggles. How fast do you write? How can you possibly turn out 10 books a year?
Well, I'm very disciplined. I think that's probably the key. I really treat it as a disciplined thing. And work at it. You know, I spend 15 hours a day at the typewriter when I'm writing and turn out 15 to 20 pages a day. Right now I'm only doing 15 pages a day because of the major novels. There's so much more plotting and research that goes into them. I always thought I was probably very prolific until I read Jack London's autobiography and realized what that man produced, and I realized I'm not by any means the Lone Ranger.
Do you do a lot of rewrite and revision?
No, I don't. I do a lot of rewrite and revision while the page is in the typewriter. I'm very sure of exactly what I'm writing before. In other words, I play out a scene and the dialogue in my mind and get set what it is I want down, as opposed to writing it down and then seeing it isn't going to reach the conclusion I want in the scene or the purpose of the scene is not going to be accomplished.
Your books have come out exclusively in paperback.
Yes, Calderborn, Calderbread. The whole Calder series have been in trade on Doubleday's done hardback editions. I have my first hardcover coming out next year. You talk about excitement. I'm really excited about it.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because many novelists have complained that in publishing in paperback, they cannot get reviews.
That's very true. That's very true. However, they are reviewing the trade edition, which is one of the major reasons that we started out in the Calder series in the trade edition, because we felt it was worth reviewing, that it was good works. So we did do a trade edition simply so that I could have the reviews.
Do you realize that very prestigious novelists such as Robert Stone, winner of the National Book Award, has always had respectful reviews since his first book, Hall of Mirrors, for example. I just cite him as an example.
Mm-hmm.
He has managed to turn out 3 books in a lifetime, and he must be in his late 50s.
Yes. Yes, that's true. That's true. But he was probably fortunate to know everything right away, or to have the instinct right away, or he had training somewhere before. But see, I have a high school education. I had to learn my craft. And I am of the firm belief that the only way you learn is by doing. No one else can tell you how to develop a character until you do it right or do it wrong, until you learn how to do scenes, get a timing to the plot and a tempo and a rhythm, or set a mood. Until you do those things repeatedly, I don't think you know. You can't just simply be taught. You have to practice and work and do it.
Being from Iowa, being from the Midwest, you set your scenes predominantly in rural areas. Is that correct?
Actually, I've done some city things, too. Obviously, I have a real definite feel for the land, the earth, and I think that has to do with my upbringing. I really believe that land influences people a lot, and I like to use the combination of what the land does, how it molds people, how it makes them or breaks them, because I think to a great extent it's true. Even in the city, you could almost take that analogy back into the city and say it's the city life, the land of the city, that also creates a person, molds their character.
My last question, Janet Daly, somewhere in the material here you said that you wanted to set the scene of each of your novels in each of the 50 states, but you were having trouble with Delaware.
Well, Delaware is so unique in that it has everything. There were so many places that you could do it, but I wanted something that would be really unique and would not be something you would easily recognize as Delaware in, because I like doing something different about a state. So when I was doing Delaware, I didn't want to do the obvious.
Which is?
Oh, there's so many obviouses, tying in the history, and the industrial.
Scion of a major family.
Right.
Gunpowder mills.
Absolutely.
Running the state, building the first highway.
Right. So which is the reason that I chose the Rehoboth Beach area. And the boardwalk, because when most people think of that, they're thinking of Atlantic City or places like that. They aren't thinking of the seaside as one of Delaware's major things. And of course, it's a beautiful, beautiful area.
Did you do a book about Delaware?
Yes, I did.
Oh, you did do this book?
I did. It was called The Matchmakers. Yes.
Ah, but that yes. It just gave you a little trouble.
It just gave me a trouble trying to find the location, the setting for it.
So you selected Rehoboth,
right?
Which I understand. People, politicians in Washington inhabit every summer.
Yes, now they do. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
What's next now? You're apparently on a publicity tour. I see you had a rather extensive one, right?
Right. That's true.
There's a newsletter.
Yes.
You know, the only other novelist that I have seen in which there is a newsletter is John Updike. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
I don't think he publishes it. He has an Updike fan club.
Mm-hmm.
But he is also very prolific.
Mm-hmm.
And he usually comes out with at least one book a year, sometimes two.
Yes.
So this is unusual. Do you get a lot of mail?
Oh, yes. We get lots of mail all the time. And the newsletter was one way of handling a lot of it. Obviously, it's difficult. You know, I do want to write books as well. And it's difficult to answer all the fan mail. Obviously, some you want to answer directly, but this was one way of dealing with it. And there's a lot of other things. You were saying what else is in the works. I know I already mentioned the hardcover. And obviously, Calder Born, Calder Bred's a new release, number one on Walden's list, which is just exciting about. And also, it's a Literary Guild selection. But the other thing that's so exciting is we made a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that exciting? My husband produced a movie based on one of my books, Foxfire Light, and it is just now released in the Midwest and is doing very well. It's been held over for its third week in the theaters it's at. So we're really excited about that, needless to say. I wrote the screenplay, my first screenplay, and going to do another one now.
Looks like you're having a lot of fun.
Oh, I am. You know, that's the joy of doing something like this. You know, it's the sky's the limit. You can try anything and if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, but you still got to try.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thanks for having me.